Welcome to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Over the next hour, you'll be introduced to business and local leaders impacting our community. Text your comments or questions directly to the studio in real time via ZipWhip landline texting at 540-371-5756 or comment on Facebook at WFVA 1230. Now, the host of Town Talk, Ted Schubel.
It is Telecommunications Week. That is going to be our focus this morning. Melissa Wood is here, the Fredericksburg 911 Center Manager, and Becky Skibo, the Emergency Communications Manager for the Spotsylvania Sheriff's Office. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Melissa, welcome back. We've got a good thing going here of you coming in and talking about all this stuff with 911. I've learned so much, and I mean, I've dealt with police, not on the having to call 911 on the emergency side, but there is just, if anything, Telecommunications Week is a good example of to highlight just what you do and the stresses of the job.
Yeah, it's definitely an unknown to the public. You know, we're the voice on the other end of the line, but we're not the people they see in their emergency. So sometimes we're forgotten. So this week is great that it's, you know, nationally recognized for this kind of hidden figure that we are. But we're still such an integral part in the 911 chain to get assistance to the public. And we're the first line of communication. And that sets the tone for emergencies. And we truly want the best outcome, and we do whatever we can to help the scenario go as smoothly as possible and get the help that they need.
Well, and we're going to talk about it this morning. One of the things that can really help is there are just certain things that you have to have. And one of the things you always talk about, and we will get into it, is a lot of times people will feel like you're asking too many questions. Just get someone here. But there are things that you have to ask.
Right. And location is the key. If we don't know where you're at, no matter what help you need, we can't get it to you.
Yeah.
And we are a wireless world. More than 70% of our 911 calls are wireless now. And technology is not perfect. So it may be that you've been routed to the wrong 911 center, but we're still going to get that help to you. So we do ask for patience, and we do ask questions for a reason. I know you just want help, but sometimes it, depending on what you tell us, it's going to change who we send to you so we can get the appropriate care, the appropriate help that you need. So we do ask for patience. It does seem a lot of questions. It is your emergency, and we understand that, but we're going to try to help you. So the questions are not frivolous. They are necessary, but location is definitely one of the first things we're going to try to establish before getting anything else.
It is Telecommunications Week. A lot of things nationally focuses in on just the work, and you guys around here have done some things.
We have. Ted, you assisted us again this year in Spotsylvania, did as well. Becky was one of the judges, along with myself, for our regional crockpot cook-off.
It was delicious food, I'll say that.
So we are continuing to improve that tradition. And we have now established that Spotsylvania is going to host it next year because they were the winners this year. So then we will go forward with that and make it bigger and better and bring more awareness to the community. And you know what? And bring the other 911 dispatchers in the same room. We talk to each other on the phone all the time.
Yeah.
And we don't ever see their faces. So this is a chance for us to really get to know the people that we deal with every day, our neighboring jurisdictions and then beyond.
No, it really is a community. Because you do all work together.
Yes, and it's the same core foundation of the type of job. If you haven't done it, it's hard to relate. So we all are on the same page. We all have the same goal for public safety, and for us to come together and celebrate ourselves is a wonderful thing.
And not only that, but just to actually put a name to a face, because we talk a lot on the phone, mm-hmm. but we're just talking on the telephone. So when we have events like this, or even like training classes and stuff like that, and we get out to meet mm-hmm. the other people from different agencies and actually see a face, that's a good thing.
Well, and Becky, you do get to getting to know each other. You'll work better together, and if you do run into a situation where you understand someone more, and in your case, a lot of times when you're dealing with one another, it's an emergency situation.
Oh, yeah, definitely. But as far as being a dispatcher, you know, of course, a lot of training goes into that and making sure that, you know, we are staying on top of what is coming down the pike as far as technology issues and getting the appropriate information and since me and Melissa are neighboring jurisdictions, I mean, we've known each other for a while, so that goes back too. But just being able to have that is definitely a plus.
Well, it's interesting because I run across this with when police officers come in and everyone talks about how they know each other because they've worked at the academy together or they've done this together. Same with you two.
Yep.
Turns out you two go way back.
Yep, I think she was, a year ahead of me in high school, but we became EMTs and firefighters together. She kind of led the way. She became a dispatcher first, then I did, and then she became the manager in Spotsylvania, and I became a manager. So we've been able to bounce ideas off of each other and have, someone on the other end to reach out to when, we have a question about something or even good ideas to, help, with our morale and special things to do, especially during this week, some ideas just to make our staff feel special.
Well, Becky, talk a little bit about yourself as far as how did you get to be a dispatcher?
Well, I started with Spotsy in 1997. I grew up in a law enforcement family. My dad was a cop. So I decided, hey, why not try the dispatch world? Plus, I ran fire rescue in King George. So I started out as a dispatcher and picked it up fairly quickly, enjoyed the camaraderie and, the fact of being able to help people, and just stayed there and worked my way up into a communications supervisor position. And then later on, an operations supervisor position was established. So I was promoted to that position. And then now I'm a communications manager. So I've seen a lot of, technology advance, and we started out, we were on pen and paper, and now we moved into computers and wireless cell phone providers and all that good stuff and CAD systems. And we just upgraded to a new Harris radio P25 system. So that was an adventure. And so, yeah.
And we've kind of gone through these adventures together.
And Melissa kind of has done the same course.
Yeah.
So she's looking at a new 911 system, and it's the same one we've implemented and last year. So I can give her, hey, this is what we had issues with. This is things that went well. Maybe you want to consider this. We both went through the radio projects, different radio vendors, but it's still a major project. It's a major change in the center. So the fact that we can say, hey, I experienced this, you might want to think about this. It's great to have that person to talk to with the other jurisdictions. It's good to have that rapport.
Well, you don't think about it, but to change, it's just like at home, if you get a new computer or anything with technology. And in your case, you've got to train people and have them ready the first day.
Yeah, it's not like we can pause. There's no pausing. So you've got to overlap, essentially, run the new system, run the old system, learn the new system, implement the new system seamlessly.
Right. It's not like you say, we're going to take a week and we're going to learn the week and we'll be back next week.
You can't do that, nope.
Both of you having run with fire and rescue, I would think that helps just because you have to be able to have some of the basic knowledge sometimes when someone is having a medical emergency to talk them through some things. Or to find out information.
It definitely helped, especially in getting the job. Back then, it was hard to, gauge experience. So if you had fire rescue experience, you were kind of seen as, oh, well, they have some knowledge of the workings of public safety.
Yeah.
And being EMT, it does help. You can recognize things. You can understand certain terms better. And when it comes to apparatus, fire apparatus, you know what the differences are. And you've already been in emergency situations dealing with the trauma and dealing with the people that are in these hysterical situations. So it helps, but it's different because now you're on the other end and you're limited on what you can actually do. So that part is frustrating. In the field, we had our hands, we had our tools. Mm-hmm. We could put hands on and help. On the phone, that's all we have is our voice. And sometimes it's frustrating only because we came from being able to put hands on. But it does help because now we know what our responders may be dealing with as well.
Yeah. Lots of we're going to get into just the stresses of the job and in all that's in all that is involved. You mentioned the cook-off that you had this week, and that was fun. The food was good, and I'm assuming that you do that because of the crock pots because of the long hours, and a lot of times you all eat out of crock pots.
Yep, a lot of facilities, they vary in the kitchen area that's available to them, or you know, under fire code, what they can actually cook. Mm-hmm. So crockpots have been like the staple of let's see what we can do in a crockpot, because it's easy, it's portable, it can feed a lot, and we cook with crockpots all the time. And because you may not have a stove, you may not have a you know a hot plate, or mm-hmm. you may just have a single counter space, and that's kind of where the idea came from. Is pretty much all centers, the crockpot might be their mainstay for cooking hot meals.
Oh, that was a great idea. It's a great idea to get everybody together, and it's been fun to be a judge the last couple of years. What other things have you done or are you going to be doing for Telecommunications Week?
I'll touch on a little bit of mine, and then I'll let Becky, because we all do different things, and some are actually reach across the county lines. But we did, obviously, the regional crockpot cook-off. This year, we also did the therapy dogs again. Last year, we did it at shift change. Didn't work so well, because these are volunteer teams coming in, and yeah. we didn't want to overwhelm them. But this year, they were actually able to give us four different times. So each shift picked which time they would like, which size dog they would like. So yesterday, we actually had a very large Great Dane weighing 145 pounds come in. Her name was Sally. She was great. And so the therapy dogs have been spread out over 4 days. I'm actually rolling in Telecommunications Week into Easter.
Oh, okay.
So we're going to do a shift-to-shift Easter egg hunt. So one shift will hide 12 eggs for the next shift.
Okay.
You write down what numbers in your egg, and those correspond to prizes, and then that shift will hide eggs for the next shift. And then at the end, you go redeem, hey, I picked number 2 and number 10, and then here's your prizes.
Okay.
So I'm kind of extending it a little bit for the Easter and Telecommunications Week.
You doing fun things in Spotsylvania, Becky?
Yes. We usually every year we feed our shifts by donations from local businesses in the county. So each shift gets a meal each day, and that's day shift and night shift. This year we spiced it up a little bit and did like an in-house contest. And each shift actually decorated a door within the 911 center, kind of along the thin gold line theme. And then we have various like command staff members, fire rescue personnel come in and judge, and whoever the shift with the most votes will get a very, very nice prize in regards to their winnings. Another thing that we also did, as far as we created a little outside area, that includes like a picnic table with an umbrella, and we have a couple of lounge chairs that was also donated by a local business within the county. So I'm trying to push where they can actually, if they need a break or take a break, they can, you know, go outside, get some fresh air, enjoy the sunshine. So that, and they also get a little goodie bag as far as for Communications Week. So,
well, thank you to you guys and all the telecommunications workers in the area, because boy, it's what we'll get into. It's a tough job, but it's done well around here. And thank you for what you guys do. It's Telecommunications Week. Becky Skibo, Melissa Wood here. Melissa from the city, Becky from Spotsylvania. More on Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA.
Welcome back to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. You can weigh in on today's Town Talk topic on Facebook at WFVA 1230. Now, your host, Ted Schubel.
Melissa Wood and Becky Skibo are here this morning. We are talking Telecommunications Week. This is the week where we thank and appreciate all the work that those at the other end of the 911 calls. All that they do. Melissa Wood is with the Fredericksburg 911. She's the center manager. Becky is the emergency communications manager for Spotsylvania. Becky, I thought of you yesterday because there's been pictures around, and I live right near the house in Spotsylvania that burned down the other night. And it's just a horrific fire. And you look at that kind of thing and you think, those are the kind of things people notice that, or you have someone with a heart attack and you call 911 and gets the ball rolling, and just the stresses that you all operate under have to be really something at times.
Yeah, definitely. And speaking of stresses, I mean, we are dealing with life and death, you know, situations and emergencies, and we have to be able to take that information from the caller and get the appropriate information, and then also, of course, dispatch the appropriate, units or responses that is needed. So, the stress and the intensity of the call, factoring in and making sure that we are getting the appropriate help and response out to people, does play a toll at times. But I will say, as far as, being a dispatcher in the past and sitting on the floor and going through that, it's just you've got to take it in, and then you've also got to be able to release.
Yeah, because there's always the next call.
Mm-hmm.
And there are at all times with every call there are people depending on you. When talk about the shifts and how long shifts are and how that goes.
For Spotsylvania, I think Fredericksburg might be a little similar. We work 12-hour shifts. They're either the permanent shift, 7A to 7P, or 7P to 7A. And it rotates where we work like every other weekend, but our weekends consist of Saturday, Sunday, Monday.
And in Fredericksburg, it's Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and we're a 6-to-6 rotation. And very similar on the structure of it. You have every other Friday, Saturday, Sunday off, where they would have, every other Saturday, Sunday, Monday off. Mm-hmm. But it's still at most 3 in a row, unless, overtime comes into play when we're short-staffed or there's call-outs. There's overtime, so your day off may not be your day off, and the center can't go unfilled. It's a must-fill, so that becomes a stress in itself if we're short-staffed. Or, like Becky was talking about earlier, when the flu hits.
It's
the whole shift. So then everybody who's off now basically has to come to work to fill an entire shift for several people. So it's stressful. And then, sometimes when the overtime is not there, then the financial stress is the other spectrum. Now they had so much overtime and now they don't. So then they're craving that overtime to meet the financial needs. So it's a very hard balance to have because it is so hit or miss in the center with the overtime and shift coverage and staffing.
How many people do you have to have or do you like to have at each time? In the center,
it definitely depends on the size. So with Fredericksburg, ideally we'd like to have 4. Our minimum is 3, but that's still very stressful because that's one call taker who handles all the paperwork and all the main calls. Then we have a fire rescue dispatcher, who then is the secondary call taker, and then we have a police dispatcher. So having just those 3, and when we get busy, is very hard. So we at least like to have 4. I can't imagine, but I would so hope that one day we'd have 5 a shift. Hmm. We'd have a 2 call takers, and then either fire rescue or police. If we have an alternate channel, then we have another person to take that alternate channel. Because sometimes we have one person handling 3 different channels and still taking phone calls. And sometimes the public doesn't realize there are other things going on. We're never going to put the public aside.
Yeah.
But if we have to put them on hold, which we've established there's no immediate life threat or we won't put them on hold, there's a reason. Because we've got other things going on. It doesn't stop. We don't only get one emergency at a time.
You all know if a situation arises where it is something big, and does that person alert somebody that this is something serious, or how does it work? Because all calls obviously aren't created equal.
Right. We have certain parameters where it's considered an emergency call. What most fire rescue are considered emergency. So more so on the police side, we do have a threshold or certain types of calls that we send as emergency, which lights and sirens, we call that code 1. If it elevates to other situations, then we notify what we call command staff, which is, the chief, the captains, and certain other logistical people or, public information people. So if it's large scale, we have all of the people that need to be notified that are key components in it aware. So should we need extra resources? Should we need to get, the public notified of something? Should it be a shelter in place or be on the lookout for a missing, person or something? So there are situations that are treated differently in different outreaches with either public notifications or staff notifications.
And ours follow just exactly the same. We have our, code 1 calls. Fire rescue is always emergencies. And we also, depending on if it's a large scale incident, that's when we do notify our command staff. So it's basically the same for us.
But and I guess at all times, it's as best you can, because I know radio systems in Spotsylvania in Stafford have had the problems of just areas of the counties that it's sometimes just hard to establish communications. But you know where police are most of the time, and you know, where people are situated?
There are assigned zones in the city. Where, you know, the city's very small, so we don't have currently the technology, which is called AVL. It's a locating system, something we may be going to just for, one, officer safety, and then better response, you know, closest to the emergency. Mm-hmm. But because we are so small, it's not something that's needed drastically at this point. It's something we want to grow into. But they are assigned zones, and we have four police zones. So we know, you know, usually they stay within their zone. So if a call falls in that area, we know which unit to send.
That's exactly what we do. We have actually five patrol zones for the county. We have also looked into the AVL, and with us in the process of looking at a new CAD system, that might be where it all comes into play and comes together. But as far as like the communication side, as far as the radios and stuff, I will say Spotsylvania has definitely improved that, because we've gone from 3 radio towers to 10 radio towers within the county. So the operability is definitely better.
We're talking Telecommunications Week this morning. Becky Skibo from Spotsylvania, Melissa Wood from the city here. More on Town Talk this morning on News Talk 1230 WFVA. We'll get into a little bit about just hiring and just the kind of personality you might want to have if this is the kind of career that you want to do. We'll be back with Melissa and Becky on News Talk 1230 WFVA. It's 8:30.
I had the radio on. I'm listening to
Talk Done Right. News Talk 1230 WFVA Fredericksburg, a Centennial Broadcasting Station. You're listening to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Got an opinion about today's show? Text the studio now at 540-371-5756. Now, here's the host of Town Talk, Ted Schubel.
It's Telecommunications Week. Melissa Wood is here. She's the Fredericksburg 911 Center Manager, and Becky Skibo is the Emergency Communications Manager in Spotsylvania. So you both are you dealing with both fire and rescue and police simultaneously?
Yes.
Wow.
And everything else that in between.
Right. And we'll get into some of the, in a few minutes, some of the 911 rules and the do's and don'ts. So, boy, a person who decides, or the dispatcher has to be able to just go back and forth between the two seamlessly.
You have an assigned console or assigned position for that day. So usually for the 12 hours, you are dedicated to the police radio.
Okay,
you're
so
dedicated. We cross train everybody because we are such a small center. Some centers can only, you know, they train you just as a call taker, and then you don't have to worry about the dispatching side until later. We start and we do it in phases. So we do teach our new recruits, you know, slowly introduce them. You know, there's the paperwork aspect. There's then the call taking administrative. Then there's the emergency call taking. Then we move them into one of the radio disciplines. It depends on their background. So if they've had a lot of fire rescue background, we tend to put them on the police side first. Or vice versa. If they have a lot of fire rescue, introduce them to something they're more comfortable with so they can get the radio functionality down. Or if they've had, you know, they've been a police officer, maybe start them on police radio because they have the background knowledge of how it's supposed to work. And now we're bringing the technical aspect into it of how the radio functions. So it is in phases, and it depends on the trainee, you know, what background they have, what they're more comfortable with, what skills we've seen them build upon already. Because it is a building blocks type situation, because then in the end, you could be doing all of it in one day, depending. Because as the police dispatcher in our agency, you're the third call taker. So you could be answering 911 because we've gotten multiples and you're still in police radio. So we do have to train them for all disciplines because you could legitimately do all in the same day.
So the call I call 911. Walk me through of how I get moved around or how that goes. I make the call, Becky. I'm a Spotsylvania resident and I'm over on Gordon Road and I've got a problem. And so I dial 911 and it comes into the center.
It comes to us. Well, we're going to get your basic information. Of course, location is the key. We definitely need to know, you know, where you are. And then we start the process of questions, who, what, when, where, why, in regards to ascertaining the information, trying to figure out what's happening or what's going on, and then dispatch the appropriate unit to you, whether if you need police or if you need fire rescue. Our center is just a little bit different than Melissa's, as we have two different positions. We have a call taker position, and we also have a dispatcher position. So we have dedicated call takers that are strictly answering the incoming, you know, calls, administrative and 911, and then we have dispatchers that are assigned to either the patrol, radio, or fire rescue. However, being a dispatcher, if the call takers are on the phones and the phones are ringing, of course, that dispatcher has to pick up the telephone and also dispatch at the same time. So there is a lot of multitasking going on.
So the call taker is that's who I'm dealing with when I'm calling 911 initially.
It could be. However, if that call taker is on a 911 or another line, then a dispatcher could also pick up. I mean, the dispatcher has the ability or does know they have the same functionality. Like, they have to answer the phones and they have to dispatch. Where a call taker is just strictly a call taker. He or she is just answering the telephones and then routing the call to the appropriate either patrol or fire rescue.
So that in those cases, and because we're smaller, we encounter that more frequently. So you as the caller having your emergency may be asked to be placed on hold. Hold on while I dispatch somebody to you. Or I'm on the radio too. Let me put you on hold so I can get help heading your way. So in those scenarios, that's why we may have to put you on hold, because the call taker that has answered your 911, your emergency, is also the one sending you the help. Mm-hmm. So they've got to be able to do both, and both in a timely manner. So you may have to be put on hold just for a brief time so that they can get the radio dispatch out.
I guess they're always looking. Everybody's doing things on computers.
Yes.
So you're typing things in and okay.
Yep. So as a call taker, you can... You finish your call, you get the basics in, and then it is designated, is it a law call or is it a fire call? And then that dispatcher sees it, pulls it up, and then sends units on that call on the computer and then over the radio.
I guess no matter where you're at, but especially in your case, Becky, it's important to be able to know where you're at and to know landmarks. And if possible, I mean, you got to know the road and that kind of thing.
Yeah, geography is definitely a very important factor And we train our personnel to, you know, like, you can't ask enough questions. You know, get as much information from the caller as possible. If the caller isn't familiar with, you know, where they are, we're asking, well, what do you see around you?
Yeah.
What is the closest cross street? Is there any buildings? And based on what they tell us, we try to do, you know, the research. And if they're calling 911, a cell 911, we have a mapping system that we can utilize to actually help assist with pulling up that location.
I guess the same with you, Melissa. It's a little smaller in the city, but...
And then it depends, because it's not an exact location. It's a triangulation location, so it's taking the longitude and latitude and converting it into an address, but it still could be 1,000 meters from that address in any direction. So landlines are more pinpoint and usually more accurate. Again, that data can also be incorrect when it comes from the phone companies, but wireless, it gives us a general area. It does not give us an exact location. So that's why it's really, really important, especially in wireless callers. You need to know where you're at or be able to get the answers to the questions we're asking of what do you see around you. Like Becky said, a street name, something that we maybe with our experience recognize, and now we know where you are, even if you don't. So if we are asking a lot of questions and it's related to location, that's because we can't help you unless we know where you are.
And callers do get frustrated because they're having an emergency and we're trying to ask them questions, but we really need those answers to those questions, because it depends on, you know, a variety of things, like what type of assistance do you need, mm-hmm. and what, you know, how many, and so we have to ask those questions just so we know what's going on and we can relay to our units that are responding what is happening as well.
And on the police side, if especially, I guess, if you're dealing with domestic issues or things, you have to determine things. Are there guns in the house?
Exactly.
Are there, just for the safety of the people that are coming?
And in that aspect, we have implemented, there's 5 key questions that we ask to kind of predict what the lethality risk is for the responding officers. So officer safety is in mind. So there are certain questions that we will be asking on domestics. Just to see, are our officers more at risk based on studies that have been done? And weapons in a domestic are very critical and for both the people in the emergency and the responding units, because obviously we don't want anyone to get hurt. And then if our help coming to you gets hurt too, then that just elevates the situation. So we want to make sure everybody stays safe.
So do you stay on with the person until they let you know, or you know that someone has gotten there?
In those types of situations where it is a violent situation or there's weapons, yes. And if it's, oh, we had an argument, but he's left, not necessarily. So it is situational dependent, but definitely if it is an emergency, if it is violent, we do stay on the line. If we lose connection on a violent domestic, we automatically upgrade it. Our units go as fast as they can, as safely as they can to get there, and we try to reestablish contact.
And that's exactly what we do too.
I guess too, you also get calls of people who see something happening, an accident.
Mm-hmm.
You see an accident, and I guess that sometimes those might be the first calls you get from just bystanders.
And we get many sometimes. And I don't want to say don't call, by all means. If you see an emergency, call, because you don't want to assume that somebody else has called.
Yeah.
And there's a name for it, and I think it's called something with bystander assumption that, oh, well, somebody else must have called, so I'm not going to. So we don't want the public to get in that mindset. It's just if there is an accident and it's in a very well-traveled area, we are going to get multiple calls on it, which is fine. But just be patient with us. If we're very quick on the phone just saying, are you calling about, and you just say yes, then that's probably going to be the extent of the phone call.
Yeah, you know about it. I guess the other thing, the person needs to speak slowly and calmly, even though the situation may not be that way. But you got to be able to understand and not always be saying, you know what, could you please repeat that?
Right, that hysterical threshold is sometimes hard to break. And that's part of the training we get, is trying to calm the caller so we can get that information out of them. And there are calming techniques that we try to use, and sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's their emergency, and you never know how you're going to react in your own emergency.
You told a story the last time you were here, just on a whole nother level of just being able to read between the lines. That sometimes emergency calls aren't so straightforward. It was a domestic violence call, I think.
And Becky's familiar with it too. It was something that I believe was on the news, or at least, you know, advertised, which I commend the female that did this this way. She called 911 and acted like she was ordering a pizza. That way she could give her address outwardly and it not be suspicious to the abuser that was in the residence. So she would, you know, she called 911. We'd answer it, our typical, you know, salutation. And then her answers to our questions were obviously not matching. So, do you have an emergency? Yes, I'd like to order a large pizza. And then, you know, we ask another question, and her answer would be what she wants on the pizza. So that, by then, we're already clued in that something's going on. And so then we can proceed with yes and no questions. And, you know, get the address, and then... In that case, yes, keeping her on the line might have been a detriment, so we would probably release that line, but no, we're getting someone there.
Yeah.
Because obviously you're not going to stay on the phone with the pizza delivery for 20 minutes.
Now, when you told that story, because I had not heard that, and you just think, her thinking to do that,
yes.
But also the dispatchers being trained to know.
To be able to pick up on that, knowing that they could tell or sense that something was wrong, and know to get... you know, dispatch a unit out there.
And I'm sure you run into situations in those kind of cases where the abuser will get on the phone and say, everything's fine, you don't need to come. And again, that's where you got to read between the lines.
Yeah, we're still going to go.
are prank calls still a problem?
Not necessarily prank, but more so the pocket dials. Pranking, to me, has trended down.
Well, you can get in big trouble for it, and there's enough.
We can
out
find
there.
You.
Yeah.
if you're pranking or making, you know, false reports, or even abusing the 911 system, there are ramifications for that. So prank calls, not so much the pocket dials. We highly encourage lock your phones, lock your keypads, because it puts a lot of extra effort on us to ensure that you truly are not having an emergency. So. We have to do many, many steps of, you know, calling it back, leaving a message, seeing if there's history behind it, trying to get an address, sending to the last known address. So there's so many things going into a simple pocket dial where the caller just lock your keypad.
Yeah.
So
you had to deal with me last summer. So I learned then, and it was because they had called a couple of times, and I think it was finally the third time I noticed it was ringing and where it was. But you got to follow up on every call.
You never know if it's an emergency. We have to always assume that it is.
As far as is there personalities to do this kind of thing? I'm sure you go through all kinds of personality tests with people, and as far as the training goes, what is the training like?
Ours is very intense. It's about 1,200 hours over about a six-month period. And again, it goes in phases. And I commend the people that say, hey, this isn't for me. And we've had a few, and Becky touched on that too. You get in there because you maybe have this misconception of what it really is. But then you get in there and you just, I can't handle this. You took a call, it hit home, and you just, and you can't get past it. And that's fine. It's not for everybody because you deal with emergencies every day. Life and death decisions every day, multiple times a day. So you've got to have a good personality that, one, you have a stress relief. You have a way when you go home to let it go. And multitasking, they say there's no real thing as multitasking. We still use that term. You've got to be able to switch your responsibilities quickly. You've got to be a team player, but you've also got to be independent. So you've got to have that personality of, okay, this is my role. We're busy. I'm on my own. Or if it's something that you can help your other team members with, you need that aspect as well.
Totally agree with you. It's perfect.
As far as the training goes in Spotsylvania, the same kind of thing?
It's pretty much the same. We start out of like a 2 to 3 week like in-house type of, I don't want to say academy, but it's an in-house type of orientation where the recruit will, you know, learn the basics as far as like learning the systems and command staff structure and touch on various types of calls, and they get a little bit of hands-on with the training portion of our CAD system. So when they're actually put on a shift or put out on the floor, it's not so foreign, because we've seen where you've come in, you know, as a new hire and you're looking at all these screens and telephones ringing. It can be a little overwhelming if you don't have like a little bit of I guess experience with the systems and knowing what each of them do and what our job responsibilities are.
One of the things that occurs to me that when going back kind of to knowing where you are, and especially if you're calling for family, it's probably not a bad idea to have, you know, birthdays written down of everybody in your family, just because at the time, when you get into a crunch, if something's gone wrong and you need to know something, just to be able to have information, and if you had to, you could go to your wallet and pull something out and, you know, not have to, maybe at the time you couldn't think of something.
And that's always good to have, you know, especially if you are the spouse or a family member, lists of medications or, you know, definitely the age of the patient.
Those
makes
kind of
a
things,
difference.
Yeah.
Not necessarily the specific date of birth, but the age of the patient. Because it makes a big difference if we have to give instructions over the phone, whether it's an infant or it's an adult.
Yeah.
So age is, there are age-appropriate instructions. So that's one of the primary things we ask for.
And medications.
On medical calls. And medications, definitely to gather them up so that they are already ready for that ambulance that gets there, so they're not spending that extra time on the scene. You've got the medications ready. And that's part of our pre-arrival instructions, is make sure you gather the medications to be ready for the ambulance.
When we come back, we're going to wrap this up, talk about closure, and wrap up a few loose ends with Melissa Wood and Becky Skibo. It's Telecommunications Week on Town Talk and News Talk 1230 WFVA.
Welcome back to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. You can weigh in on today's Town Talk topic on Facebook at WFVA 1230. Now, your host, Ted Schubel.
It's Telecommunications Week. Becky Skibo, Melissa Wood here. From Becky from Spotsylvania, Melissa from the city. One of the things, what if I accidentally, Melissa, dial 911 and it's like, oh, I didn't mean to do that?
Stay on the line. It's okay. People make mistakes. Stay on the line. If you hang up, we have to track you down to make sure you truly didn't have an emergency. So stay on the line. Say, I'm sorry, I accidentally dialed it. We'll ask for your name just so we can document it. And, you know, if there's any context clues and we really don't think it was an emergency, or an accident, we'll follow up. But don't hang up because we're going to follow up. So if you just stay on the line, then it's an easy closure for that.
Okay. Same. I guess the same with you, Becky. Just stay on the line because you guys have to do the same thing.
We do the exact same thing because we're going to, you know, we want you to stay on the line so we get the information. If you hang up, that's just more time that we have to, you know, maybe research and call you back. And so it's just easier to stay on the line and answer our questions and be done.
And I guess if you think it's an emergency, call 911. Is there any rule of thumb as far as when you should call 911 if you think it's truly an emergency?
If you think it's truly a police, fire, or medical emergency, when in doubt, call 911. Don't call 911 if you need a phone number for something. Don't call 911 if someone's life's not in danger or the property is not in danger. So obviously a fire is an emergency, even though it may be property. It could be life. But it should be for emergencies only. If you're calling for a non-emergency, you could potentially tie up that line for a true emergency. So I suggest, you know, where you live, get the non-emergency number to your local sheriff's office or police department, program it in your phone. That way you're not calling 911 saying, hey, I need to talk to, you know, Public Works or there's a dog running loose. Those aren't true emergencies, and we don't want to tie up those emergency lines.
How can I say thank you if a dispatcher has really helped me?
We definitely don't get the closure that the field responders get and the thank yous in person. So if a dispatcher has truly helped you and you appreciate that, we highly encourage reach out to that either police department or 911 center if they're standalone and say, hey, I truly appreciate what happened. If you want to come meet us, you know, we encourage that as well. We never get that closure. We dispatch the help and then that's it. We don't know what happens. And lawfully, we can't ask.
No, and sometimes I might want to say thank you. I want to say thank you because you were the first person I was in contact with that helped me.
Yes, and I know from our standpoint, it does mean a lot. Even just to call and say thanks, that appreciation factor means the most.
Well, thank you both of you for being guests, but boy, for what you do and overseeing all that you do, it's. A lot of times you're the ones behind the scenes, but getting it going. So,
well, thank you for bringing attention to our career.
Yes.
Thank you
yes.
so much. We will see you soon. Come back again often. Melissa Wood, the Fredericksburg 911 Center Manager, and Becky Skibo, the Emergency Communications Manager in Spotsylvania County. That is it for Town Talk. See you tomorrow on News Talk 1230 WFVA.
Thanks for listening to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. The views expressed by the host and guests on this program are their own and not necessarily those of this station, its management, or Centennial Broadcasting. The Glenn Beck Program is next on News Talk 1230 WFVA.